Live from KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Alaska's primary provider of real-time marine vessel tracking has lost about a tenth of its funding following Governor Mike Dunleavy's latest line item veto. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
After Governor Dunleavy's first round of vetoes, the legislature reinserted the $400,000 in cruise ship passenger revenue to support Alaska's network of ship tracking stations. That money would be drawn from the head tax paid by every cruise ship passenger that visits Alaska. The second time around, the governor vetoed it again. Dunleavy's spokesman Matt Shukro says the Marine Exchange has received about $2.8 million in head tax since 2013, and the governor feels it should look elsewhere.
There's an examination happening on all types of spending, and this is one organization that, while they have done good work, they seem to be an organization that has unspent funds that can begin looking at new ways to operate, and those monies can begin being dedicated to different port projects and communities.
That $400,000 isn't going to be used elsewhere in the state's budget, because head tax money is restricted.
If we don't spend the money, it doesn't go anywhere. It just sits and piles up.
That's Marine Exchange Executive Director Ed Page.
It's not a fund that could be used for other public services or for schools or for housing or drug programs or what have you. It's restricted to maritime application.
His organization offers real-time vessel tracking for a fee to the maritime industry, everyone from cargo ships to cruise liners to oil tankers. The vetoed state funding would have been used to upgrade existing tracking stations. It would also add additional transmitters to reduce the number of dead zones where vessel tracking is spotty or non-existent. Page says Marine Exchange will dig into savings, but the funding loss will delay upgrades to infrastructure. The cruise industry hasn't weighed in publicly over whether it supported head tax funds going to Marine Exchange. Cruise Lines International Association Alaska President John Binkley told Coast Alaska it's understandable for the Dunleavy administration to press the Marine Exchange to rely more on member fees. And many of the larger cruise lines in Alaska are already dues-paying members.
We think it's beneficial to the state and to maritime commerce, and that's why all of our members are participants in it.
Governor's office spokesman Matt Shukro also noted the Marine Exchange has cash reserves on hand to draw from.
A lot of people candidly have said that they're very happy to see that they're able to afford a very nice facility that they have, and a lot of people see it as time that these funds go back in the communities as they're intended.
Page says the nonprofit does have about $2 million in savings, but that's out of fiscal responsibility, and they shouldn't be punished for it.
We don't do it like the federal government or state government go by year and spend all your money at the end of the year. That's a total waste of time and doing business. It's the worst budget model possible. We carry reserves so we can ride through the storms. We don't hope that a budget's going to be passed and whether we're going to exist in the future.
The line item veto eliminates 11% of Marine Exchange's $4 million annual budget. Nearly half of its funding comes from private industry. The U.S. Coast Guard makes up the rest. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
As communities across Alaska react to deep state budget cuts, some Alaska Natives are saying the state can learn from their cultures how to survive hard times. They say Alaska Natives are galvanized to try to prevent the cuts from happening or to step in to respond if they do. Alaska Public Media and KTUO's Andrew Kitchenman recently covered a special Native Issues Forum in Juneau that included brainstorming ideas on how to respond to the cuts.
Alexana Salmon is the president of the Igiagig Tribal Village Council. She says Alaskans can learn from Alaska Native stories, like how to survive in times of starvation. Salmon says the cultures and traditions of Alaska Natives have prepared them to respond to the cuts.
This is our home. And we're the hosts, and we need to be not only at the table, we need to be setting the table. And in this situation, we need to help this administration because they don't come from the culture that we come from that doesn't think in 10 years or 20 years. We're thinking of progress for the next 10,000 years.
The Alaska Natives participating in the forum proposed a wide range of responses. One was to create an Alaska Native Education Consortium that could receive Head Start funding directly from the federal government if Governor Mike Dunleavy again vetoes all state Head Start funding. Dunleavy has said the cuts are necessary to bring the amount the state spends in line with how much it raises. He also supports paying nearly $1 billion more in permanent fund dividends according to the formula in a 1982 state law. One participant says more Alaska Natives should run for elective office, including governor. Richard Peterson is the president of the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. He says Dunleavy has, quote, declared war on Alaska.
How do I feel like we're not at war? I know as the president of Tlingit and Haida, these vetoes are going to happen. I have no doubt of it. All I know is what's left is our need to move on and our need to provide services for our people.
Peterson says he's finding it hard not to use what he calls his angry voice.
Tlingit and Haida operates Head Start programs here in Southeast Alaska. Our people, our parents, they're not going to care whose fault it is when I tell them we have to close down centers. All they know is their babies aren't going to get the best start they deserve.
Native Village of Afagnac Tribal Administrator Melissa Borton says that the Tribal Welfare Compact the state and tribes signed 2 years ago shows the important role of tribes in providing services in the state. And she says the budget cuts are galvanizing Alaska Natives.
Our people are fired up, and I love it, because it's about time. It's about time that we get fired up and actually tell them what we want.
Genevieve Guanzan, an elder, says Tlingit ancestors can teach Alaska a lesson.
I'm going to say this and see if anybody will understand. Chakun, yeyantokayin, hachishkohas, wasawa hakwani. And this is saying, long ago, our grandparents were right where we are right now. And they survived. So will we. Because they taught us.
Guanzan ended her comments by singing a Tlingit song, calling on Alaskans to get up and stand together.
Mushteen, mushteen, yechikachtune.
In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Firewood harvest can be timed to target lower moisture content. University of Alaska researchers monitor water content in spruce, and UAF forest ecologist Jesse Young Robertson says there's a key point when moisture drops dramatically.
When the air temperature drops below freezing for more than 24 hours, they'll dump about 70% of that water back into the ground.
Young Robertson says the moisture content change happens within 24 hours of the temperature dropping below freezing. Firewood of 20% or less moisture content produces more heat and less fine particulate emissions. And Young Robertson says cutting trees in the winter can help get it there sooner.
That tree will dry itself for you. It'll drop from saturation, which is about 100%, to roughly 30%, pretty dry. So therefore, what that does is it cuts down on your actual drying time after you stack it at your house.
Young Robertson says UAF is partnering with the Fairbanks North Star Borough to incorporate the information in wood harvest guidelines aimed at meeting a 20% or less moisture content requirement. When it comes to the search for the perfect wave, Alaska might not be the first place that a surfer would look. But in recent years, the community of Yakutat has developed a reputation as the premier surf spot in Alaska. Now a group of surfers in the small town is hosting what may be the first surf camp of its kind in Alaska. KHNS's Henry Leisha has the story.
Over the past 4 years, Britta Tonneson has been making regular visits to Yakutat for work. When she visited the first time, she had no idea that the community is known as the surf capital of Alaska.
So now every time I come, I rent a surfboard and a wetsuit and just go paddle around.
That's how she got to know Jack Endicott, owner of the local surf shop Icy Waves.
And then last summer, I told him I was joining this nonprofit called She Jumps, which is an outdoor education nonprofit for women and girls, and that I wanted to, a dream was to get a surf clinic going.
Endicott and Tonneson ran with the idea. Now, She Jumps is offering an instructional clinic for women over the next 3 days in Yakutat. The lessons will be taught by pro surfer Jason Ratboy Collins and his wife Katie Collins, who purchased a house in Yakutat last year.
Jack thinks it's the first clinic of its kind in Alaska, and it happens to be all women. So we have 10 women who signed on.
Endicott says there are about a dozen local surfers in Yakutat. He says the community also draws surfers from around the world who are looking for adventure.
This is a real friendly break. Everybody's, for the most part, are glad that you came. You know, they don't mind having having people out there surf with them. So just it's a neat thing, and when the waves are good, it's they're really good.
Endicott says that Icy Waves has never offered lessons, but he hopes that She Jumps will continue to offer more camps in the future. He has stocked up on beginner boards just in case. Reporting from Haines, I'm Henry Leisha.
And finally, Alaska scientists say the chances of a polar bear encounter have increased after research reveals the bears are arriving on shore earlier and staying on land longer. The Anchorage Daily News reported Saturday that scientists, as part of a U.S. Geological Survey, found changes in the sea ice habitat have coincided with evidence that polar bears' use of land is increasing. Biologists say the bears come from the Beaufort Sea during the ice melt season, when the ice breaks up in the summer and refreezes in the fall. Scientists say the bears usually appear in mid-August, but residents have reported sightings as early as May in Kaktovik, a small populated town about 640 miles north of Anchorage. Scientists say the ice melt season has increased substantially since the 1990s. And that is the KTOO News Update for Monday, August 12th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea.